Welcome to the Sorry I Offended You podcast. This is Brandon Marshall Havener, and this episode is going to be how to hold your frame in conversations like a mediocre white male. Because, you know, like, there's nothing worse than a mediocre white male. Anyway, before we get started, I want to recognize that this is a very traumatizing day. It is April Fool's Day, and I made my statement online that I want to repeat on this podcast, just so you know how sincere this is. So, as I said this morning, just a reminder that April Fool's jokes are literally white supremacy, and it's privilege AF to fool people. Take this day to educate yourself and do better instead of punching down. Thanks. And then I added on, because I feel like there needs to be more to add on to this conversation. I said, not only is April Fool's a misogynoir holiday, it is also an ableist holiday where people make fun of other people who don't have the ability to function with a sense of humor. Your dry humor may be funny to you, but it's not funny for the people who can't tell a joke unless there is an emoji. Tell that it's a joke unless there's an emoji next to it or a just kidding. Just remember, there's probably somebody who is upset about gas prices right now, and you joking that gas prices lowered would put them through emotional trauma, and trauma is not a joke at all. I have spent 5 years to become trauma-informed, to be informed when I notice trauma, and I will eliminate all trauma from this world by traumatizing others for joking. You have been warned. Thank you. So, anyway, welcome to the Sorry I Offended You podcast. Today, the real deal about this episode is that I had this interesting conversation with a random woman online, and usually they're just stupid conversations. She was emotionally reacting to the very thing that people are talking about this week. I'm actually tired of saying it, but I also find some good angles and content and ways of psychology and understanding around cancel culture through all of this. So I thought it was worth doing yet another podcast. And, you know, just how I responded to the conversation. Because in these conversations, when it comes to the wokeism that is going on in the world and all that stuff, is like people freeze or people feel ashamed when people emotionally react to them. Now, I want to say that I handled this conversation in a way, but I always want you to know that you have the freedom not to respond to people if they're coming up on your profile. I sort of charged into this conversation head first, just because I'm the way that I am, and sometimes I like to, I guess, practice my conversational skills. Not that I take the topic lightly or anything like that. In fact, I do think this topic is very serious, and I think a lot of people in this day and age are getting bullied online over this and feeling ashamed about themselves and taking on the labels that are applied to them very seriously, which is part of the reason why I do this podcast and why I do my program called Fuck Cancel Culture. If you want to go deeper into training yourself to be equipped with cancel culture, just like in this podcast, there's master classes and really detailed content on the different ways that you can approach this and the different ways you can assert boundaries and just all types of stuff in my new signature digital program, Fuck Cancel Culture, which you can find in the show notes. And right now I have armed that into my bio on my Instagram for the direct link to that program. So if you're interested in it, it's something that will serve you for life, and it will help train you and equip you to fully express yourself without the fear of critics and things of that nature. So, I have so many fucking memes and screenshots on my phone, so bear with me for one moment. So this was a conversation, obviously, again, with the whole Chris Rock and Will Smith thing. And I bring it up again because I think there's so many different angles of psychology, relationships, and things of that nature. I don't like to get into celebrity gossip, and I don't like to demonize one person. You know, I like to observe it and say, you know, what mistakes were made. Something that I do want to point out, though, is that in 2020, Chris Rock came out to say that he was on the spectrum. And while I do take this seriously, and I think that slapping somebody over a joke is, you know, a horrible thing to do, because it, like, escalates it. Like, you know, you're just trying to, you know, joking, even if you're not considered on the spectrum, you're taking a risk, right? And you're taking a risk of entertaining people while also telling the truth. And really, it takes mature adults to be able to go to a stand-up show or a comedy and really to sit in the front row. I love sitting in the front row of stand-up comedy. I was like, bring it. Like, say all the crazy shit. And sometimes I've had some vile shit said to me in stand-up comedy. Sometimes racist things, like where there was actually hatred behind it more than comedy. But I digress. So anyway, the interesting thing I find about this is that people emotionally reacted when this thing happened and called people an ableist, called Chris Rock an ableist, called the people who, justified physical violence because of ableism. Now, ironically, with this new information, the tables have shifted, and it's like, what does that make you if you are cheering on violence towards someone on the spectrum and, who's on the spectrum and who would make that mistake, who could make that mistake and unintentionally offend somebody. So it's like, now we have this, I find it ironic how people make hypocrites out of themselves by not having the full story and by jumping on these bandwagons and emotionally reacting and maybe even flinging hate to other people. Now, overall, with this whole thing, everybody could be fighting each other over a Pfizer ad. Because the fucking show was sponsored by Pfizer, and Pfizer is actually working on a drug. Sorry if I pronounce this wrong, but for alopecia, they're actually working on a drug to help people who suffer from that. So, that might have been a creative ad to put that in people's awareness and bump up profits. That's still a conspiracy theory. I like to entertain conspiracy theories. That doesn't mean that I'm always wearing my tinfoil hat and I think it's 100% true, but that's an interesting angle that has come up in the online space. And I think obviously we should take conspiracy theories with a grain of salt, but we shouldn't denounce them and call people crazy for looking for the truth, because that's just crazy in itself. So anyway, in this conversation, I'm trying to figure out where. Okay, so this was a whole conversation about the incident that happened. And yeah, let's go for it. So this person says, and personally, I completely agree with what he did, as in Will Smith going after Chris Brown. For too long, black women has been the absolute butt of jokes. This is from a white woman who said this. And this guy responded, he said, nah, you don't get to assault people for jokes. Otherwise, comedy shows would be 1 to 2 hours of people just slapping a comedian. People have said much worse. And no matter what someone says, you don't get to assault them because you're offended. Otherwise, we should teach kids to have lunchroom brawls with knives because everyone says bad things occasionally about everyone. No violence for words, please. So she responded not so hatefully. I don't have this in order, so I apologize. Okay, she responds, but you know who says people who enjoy punching down in jokes? You know who says that people who enjoy using their words to harm other people with zero consequence? Sorry, there are certain words and certain intersectional dynamics at play to allow a person to physically stop verbal battery. So glad you've never been on the receiving end of that type of abuse for. And jokes should never punch down. You should never make fun of someone who has less power than you do. But then again, intersectional dynamics and understanding that black women are among the least protected people probably goes right over your fucking heads or offends you somehow. Someone may want to start the oppression Olympics because you are a privileged white male who's never had to consider the intersectional dynamics of his existence compared to other people. Now, the whole intersectionality conversation, there's truth to it, and really what it would be called is the intersectionality theory. It's a theory that people believe that helps make society a better place to regain power in society. So if you looked at the white man as having all the power, intersectionality is supposed to balance that power. The only issue I find with this is when it's applied, it's usually used in abusive language like this, and it's usually used as a justification to abuse people who are not ranked as marginalized on the intersectionality scale. So it's almost like an excuse to verbally abuse people. Like if you're somewhere on the intersectionality scale where you have less privilege, it's often used as this justification that you are allowed to verbally abuse another person, or in some cases physically abuse another person, because they have more privilege than you do. And that's where this whole thing falls apart. And that's when the hypocrisy leaks out. Now, I'm not saying that's the intention behind intersectionality, and maybe that wasn't the vision. I don't know. But what I see online and how it's used, it's at the very least, it's been warped as something, as an excuse to be abusive toward other people. So in my comment of the thread, I said about her claim on black women being the butt of all jokes in comedy, I said, I haven't seen this to be true outside of a New York Times or Washington Post article. Where is the date that black women are targeted in jokes more than anybody else? Now, I asked this question, I didn't say it to necessarily be invalidating to other people's experience. And I know there's experiences that black women go through that I don't go through, right? That, you know, they go through, they deal with a lot of shit at, you know, I've seen it firsthand with jobs and, you know, the whole relation with their hair. And Chris Rock even did a documentary about hair, which, you know, it's like, and people kind of use that to show hypocrisy, but like, I guess like people don't understand comedy in a way, or having a sense of humor. And I don't know, I just feel like there's this sensitivity. And my issue about this whole thing is that if we're constantly saying, if you can't punch down in comedy, like you can't joke about somebody who has less privilege than you on the intersectionality scale, do you ever build a society where people have equal opportunity? Right? So it's like, when does this stop? Is there a goal here? Is there a solution here? Because if we create it where a group of people are not allowed to be joked about, full stop, you know, with no nuance and no understanding of the energy behind the joke, what do we have? We have a society where we're framing certain identities to be more fragile than other identities, and then you're perpetuating a cycle where we're constantly creating this narrative that certain people are more fragile or weaker than other people, to the point where we're not even allowed to joke. And the issue I have with this is that joking is what I found to make relationships closer. And I don't register with all this nonsense because I've grown up in diverse situations where I've had friends of different races and different genders that I've joked about. Like many of the jobs that I worked at in my early 20s was mostly black women, and we joked to each other a lot, you know, and relationships as well. And that's what brings us together, is when we can joke about our differences with a form of respect. I know you can disrespectfully joke to people, and I know that you can be harmful to, you know, say mean things and hide it under jokes. Like, I've definitely been on the receiving end where somebody was quite abusive in their language, and then when you called them out on it or set a boundary, they're like, what the fuck, dude? I was just joking. Like, I get that. But if we don't have nuance in this conversation, then we're really missing the plot. That's my point. And when I ask these questions, I know that people frame it as, oh, a white man is playing devil's advocate and blah, 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 and he has privilege and he's hiding behind his privilege. But to me, it's an honest question. Like, I actually looked it up in Google and YouTube and said, okay, is there anything that I'm missing here? Is this really a reality that black women are joked about more than everybody else. And I found a little bit of it, but, you know, I found it, someone made an example of like Vine comedians, and I don't even like Vine comedians anyway, where they sort of did like a Madea type thing where they, you know, were black men, mostly black men dressed up as black women. And the person doing that video said they found it insulting and that it's over for the Vine comedians and all that stuff. So I did find that. But really, like, I, when I say this, I genuinely try to look for the truth, because I just don't, I don't like when lies are spread. So anyway, let me get back to this conversation. She responds to me when I asked for like, hey, what's the date of, you know, black women being joked about more than anybody else? She says, open up a computer and do a little research. I swear to God, the fact that it's two white men that are disagreeing with me. I bet you don't believe in white privilege or male privilege, do you? So what she's doing now is that basically it's an emotional reaction, and she's making a claim that wasn't spoken about. It's not giving the benefit of the doubt. What I suggest in conversations to come to some type of resolution is to not make these type of assumptions, not assuming somebody's a certain political leaning, not assuming that, you know, they're not smart enough to recognize their privilege and things of that nature. And also not attacking their gender. Like, once you attack somebody's identity or their gender in a conversation, you're no longer having a constructive conversation. And that's the issue with this entire ideology, is that we put identity first. It's not bad to recognize identity or race or look at things through a racial lens per se, but when nothing matters other than race and gender, and that's what we all we see each other for, then how do we connect? When we make assumptions about people based on their race or gender, and we make assumptions of their actions based on their race or gender, or what we tend to assume what their political leanings are, then there's no room for connection and there's no room for unity. So what are we actually doing this fighting for? What are we doing to actually stop punching down in comedy and things of that nature if we can't even have a fucking conversation outside of, you know, just seeing somebody for the color of their skin or what's below their belt? So, you know, it's just like, it's wild to me. It's interesting that identity politics claims to be in the fight of ending racism, but oftentimes these conversations are only approached in a racist lens and being prejudiced towards somebody based on their identity. So we got that. And I responded, and I'm trying to, you know, I'm doing my best to keep my emotional cool. And I think I did a good job in that. I guess it's on the eyes of the beholder. But when I respond to these conversations, I try to stay centered and just be logical. So again, I want to say that you do not have to get in these conversations. I also recommend not getting into a bunch of these conversations. But I know a lot of people have been on the receiving end of these accusations and felt bad about it. And I think that me pointing out these conversations and the psychology of what's actually going on can be extremely helpful. That's why I decided to do this podcast episode. That's why I decided to post some of these conversations in my stories. So I responded, all I asked were for examples. As a fan of comedy, I don't see it. Bill Burr, Dave Chappelle, Joe Rogan, Chris Rock himself, Tracy Morgan, George Carlin, etc. are all some of my favorite comedians, and I never seen them go out of their way to target black women more than anybody else. Even Louis C.K., who got in a lot of trouble, wasn't known for targeting black women. I'm not a fan of the Colberts or the Samantha Bees, but I doubt they're targeting black women because it's against their brand. So I'm genuinely asking, I've been a big fan of comedy and haven't seen it. Also, I don't think it's necessary to be sexist toward me in this conversation. And she probably didn't like the last part. Well, she definitely didn't, but what else we got here? Sorry, I got these conversations mixed up. Okay, so she responds, get me to do the labor for you instead of doing it yourself. Literally taking you seconds to Google, and you are so lazy and offended that I would expect you to do your own research. Then she responds again, "These aren't feelings, these are facts, but you continue to sit in a place where you think that because I'm not doing the labor for you, I don't have any facts to back up my statements, that you just being lazy as fuck and capitalizing on that laziness to make me look bad. I could say the same thing I tried, just another mediocre white man doing what he does." So it's like this assumption that we're all like, all men are mediocre and we just like, we just do mediocre things and we're too lazy to look things up and all that stuff. It's funny, kind of. It's disturbing, but funny. You know, you got to have a sense of humor about it. So I responded, but I was blocked before this response went in. But also I'm reading this response for a reason, because I think it really breaks down everything that's going on. And I think what's necessary is for you to see the underlining meanings of what people say in these conversations and what is actually happening. So I responded, "Jennifer," oh, sorry, I didn't want to mention her. I posted her name anyway. It's a public fucking conversation, so I don't really care that much about saying her name, but I had the intention not saying her name. So I guess, you know, her fucking name is Jennifer now, but whatever. "I'm not offended. I'm not offended. I've actually searched for it and couldn't find any examples. I'm actually interested in researching things like this because I'm into deconstructing topics and helping make the world a better place. We are both investing energy into this conversation. If you're resentful about it, then you should stay away from these threads. I did not think giving specific examples or search terms would constitute into strenuous labor. If it is, you are welcome to not labor. Being prejudiced toward white men or Joe Rogan will not unite us. I don't agree with your comedy choices or lack thereof, but I'm not using that as an excuse to silence you." Oh, and I think I missed one of the responses she did. Before I said that response, she said, you just fucking with Joe Rogan as a comedian that you actually listen to? Okay, now I know everything I need to know about you. You go enjoy that misogyny and that total ignorance. Have fun." So I responded in the way that I did, and I wanted to keep it emotionally neutral. And I was actually interested in where she was getting her information from, to be quite honest. I don't say this to invalidate experiences, but I also think that it sets a dangerous precedent to victimize a group of people and say that they can't handle jokes like you do, because to say that they can't handle jokes like you do. So Rebecca's coming in here. She's like tripping over stuff and distracting me. But thank you for the mocha. But where the fuck was I? So anyway, I think that it can set something when you know the drama triangle and you know how dangerous it can be for somebody when you play the savior and what message that sends. And basically the message sends when you play as a rescuer, you're basically saying somebody is not as capable as you. So you got to be really careful in these situations. I'm getting distractions now. Why is there email notifications? I never get email notifications. You got to be mindful of when you're condescending and you're making these outrageous claims not backed with data. Because, you know, for some people, it may be validating to be like, yeah, girl, you're right. I don't like being joked about. And we are like, you know, for some people, there might be this self-righteousness. But for other people, it's like, fuck, I'm tired of you treating me like I'm below you and that I can't take a joke like you can. Like, what the fuck? So there's two sides of that coin. And when you jump on the drama triangle and rescue people over something that basically rescuing people of blowing things out of proportion and then making a claim for you to swoop in and to be labeled and held up as a hero, you're doing more damage than good in the situation. And that's why I think it's so important. And that's why I think we need to ask ourselves, how far are we willing to go to be so against quote-unquote punching down and thinking that certain identities of people aren't capable of joking or having a sense of humor or are unable to go to a stand-up comedy show and hear jokes that may make a little bit of fun about themselves? How far are we willing to go? Because if we're willing to take all humor out, I actually think that it does the opposite, and I'll stand by it. Because me growing up, I had a better understanding of people that didn't look like me because we were able to joke about each other. Sometimes it's joking about the similarities that we had. Sometimes it's joking about the differences. Sometimes it's gasp. Gasp. Am I supposed to go gasp? Sometimes it's joking about stereotypes. Sometimes it's like, I remember a black woman that I worked with, that I was friends with, like, she said something that was like outrageous and like sounded racist, but it sounded funny just coming out of her mouth. And then like I reactively laughed, and then she's like, why would you laugh at that? Are you a racist? But like, that was bonding, right? That was like, you know, it's like we see our differences and we can joke about it. And I'm not advocating for making distasteful jokes. And I do think it's good to tune in and see if, you know, to add in humor with, you know, being heart-centered and understanding people's boundaries and understanding when you go too far and not using jokes as a weapon to hurt people. I do think that, but also I'm not with the anti-joke culture or whatever you want to call it, where people are totally against comedy, because what I found, I've been deep into the woke communities and I've learned some things from it. I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I think some concepts are necessary, and I think looking deeper at things is necessary. But I've been deep into the woke community. I've been deep into the comedy community. I've been deep into the hip hop community, where we also would joke about each other. And I also, like, you know, I went to fucking clubs. I was the only white guy, right? We would perform and I was the only white guy there, and we had joking banter and we had fun, and, you know, it was down to earth. I couldn't imagine if we applied woke ideology there and, you know, if they joked to me and then I joked back and then they're like, you're punching down at me. How dare you with your privilege? That would break us apart if, you know, we were too sensitive to joke to each other. And not saying, you know, again, I'm not saying to be mean, and to be angry. Like, there's definitely times in my past of experimenting with comedy where I felt like my anger got in the way of the humor of the joke. But I'm saying that just growing up and knowing what raised me, a thing that helped make me, quote unquote, more inclusive and more, you know, inclusive with my friendships and just a normal fucking human being instead of a weirdo when it comes to different races having relationships. What helped me was probably Dave Chappelle and my friends joking about Dave Chappelle. Probably just, you know, hip hop probably had a good deal with it, because, you know, hip hop is, people would consider black culture, but it's also a bit of a melting pot, right? Where, you know, like, if, you know, raw hip underground hip hop is like, if you have skill, you have skill, and we'll respect you for it. So really, that's what helped me more than any type of intellectual, what would they call it? Academic woke teachings that I've gotten into maybe in my late 20s or 30 or early 30s or whatever. I would definitely say what helped me relate to people and what I've seen unify people is comedy. You know, comedy is a big factor. So what I see is when people rage against comedy and try to call it racist and get angry over it, a lot of times I see people doing more damage than good. Not saying that they don't have a point. Not saying that some people can be hurtful behind jokes. That is true. But what I see a lot is more damage than good being done. Playing the drama triangle, trying to be like this white savior, and making these claims that sometimes aren't rooted in facts. So that's my thoughts. That's my conversation. The main takeaway that I want to drive home here is, in these conversations, remember to stay emotionally centered. If you can't stay emotionally centered, walk away for a minute, breathe, meditate, do what you can do, and stick in the pocket. That's a football term, but stay in the pocket, right? Don't let their claims knock you off center. Don't entertain them calling you a white het normative racist or whatever you are, whatever they try to weaponize against you. Remember who you are from the heart, and don't even entertain chasing those things. And another thing is that emotional labor thing. That's what a lot of times in cancel culture people will use, where it's like, I'm not doing the labor for you, or I did all this emotional labor and you're not responding to me. No, you're allowed to have boundaries, or dirty deleting my comments because I did all this emotional labor. You're allowed to delete their comments, and they should have the personal responsibility if they feel like they're doing emotional labor, either A, not to involve themselves in the conversation, or B, copy and paste it on a Google Doc, right? You can offer them to teach them how to use a fucking Google Doc if they think you're deleting their emotional labor. But that's something that's often seen, the whole emotional labor argument. There was actually one person who pressured Rebecca into paying her $1,000 for emotional labor. Like, it's just ridiculous what goes on in these woke communities and the logic there. There's like, I posted a comment on your post and now you owe me $1,000. And this is something that's commonly happened. I don't know if it happens that much anymore. But when first, like, cancel culture was kind of brought into the coaching industry, people were like invoicing people for fucking emotional labor. And if anything, I just want to tell you that you get to have those boundaries. You don't have to entertain that bullshit. And it will pass if you don't react, right? Kind of contradictory to the conversation, I feel like I can just handle myself and people end up blocking me because I don't entertain their bullshit. But if anything, if you feel overwhelmed and people are coming at you, if you don't emotionally react, and that includes apologizing, don't apologize, don't react, don't push back at them, just let them bore themselves out, they'll move on to somebody else. And the thing is, in these situations, I've been called out by people, and then I mention it to them like a year later, like, this one time you accused me of doing something that I didn't do. And they'll be like, I don't remember that. So it's like these people are emotionally reacting to things, and it's so normalized in their life to throw stones at people. Sometimes they don't even fucking remember what they said to people. So I hope that eases you in your quest to express yourself and to deal with the critics. Just let them bore them or complicate things for them where they're tired of you. Sometimes I go to the route of complicating things and pissing them off with logic and they block me. But you can also take the route of ignoring them and being very, what's the word? Fuck, I had the word, but when you have the word and you don't have the word? Indifferent, that's a word. When you're completely indifferent and it's like, whatever, they'll tire themselves out and they'll go away and they'll find somebody else who will emotionally react. So anyway, thank you for listening to this podcast. I hope this was helpful. And if you want to go deeper into this subject, again, join my program, Fuck Cancel Culture. It will be in the show notes and it's directly linked in my Instagram. And it's on my website at brandonmarshallhavener.com. And, if you want to just share some love and support and you enjoyed this episode, go rate my podcast, give me 5 stars and leave a nice comment, or you can post your thoughts on this podcast on your social media, tag me, and I'll be happy to share your thoughts into my stories. We share each other, and we're one big happy family. So thank you again. Happy April Fools. Don't take my initial comment seriously. Joke about people, fool people, mentally fuck with people, because that's what this day is about. But do it in a kind way, I guess. But, fuck with people, because, there's only one day that we get to do it. I honestly, not true. I think I celebrate April Fool's every day. Anyway, love you all. Peace.